And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week, I want to discuss with you who enters politics. And I'd like to kick this off with a Marxist quote, in this case, Groucho Marx. In Horse Feathers, Groucho's saying, "I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you've changed it or condensed it, I'm against it." Now, it's true that this is a quote from Groucho Marx, but it seems to me that it's a quote from Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah. Or actually, it's basically a statement that we hear from the Koch brothers libertarian. They don't want government to do anything. Let them run free. No rules, no regulations, nothing. And it's expanded its base to a whole number of politicians. You know, the Republicans are against everything except for the things that they can.
Well, they're not against tax cuts for the 1%. They're not against corporate tax cuts. That they're for.
Yeah. But that's the government not doing things, you know.
Well, not doing things for the people, but doing things for the corporations.
Right. And you know, the word public service or public servant has kind of been lost, that idea.
A little bit berserk, and it's unfortunate that it's Kyrsten Sinema who is the poster child for Big Pharma at this point, preventing climate change legislation. But she is. She sold out what she ran for. She ran as a environmentalist. She's against the provisions of the infrastructure bill that challenge and try to reverse climate change. She ran against the Big Pharma. She ran for the government controlling drug prices. She's against that now. It's a shame that it's a woman who's standing up for this, but we have women in politics who are thoroughly rotten people. Marjorie Taylor Greene, for one, who's currently in a big war with Lynn Wood, another, not a woman, but some sort of berserk sort of person. Each one calls the other a traitor. Each one claims that the other should be attacked by demonstrators and protesters who fling at them the word traitor. But we do have the example here in Scranton of women who've been in politics and played an honorable role, and pathfinders, pathbreakers.
Yeah. Someone who's close to me, or was close, but her family is very close to me, and that was the late Marion Munley, who was honored this past week by having a memorial placed on Courthouse Square next to several other all-male public servants from this area, former Congressman Joe McDade, former Governor Robert P. Casey, and former Congressman and Governor UN Ambassador William Scranton, whose family, of course, basically started the city. And, you know, the story of Marion Munley is quite remarkable. She married into a family that was in politics. Her father-in-law had been a state representative from the early 1920s. And when he passed away, her husband took over that job and was there until he died rather unexpectedly in 1947, and she was there left with two young children, no job, no husband, and she ran for his spot in a special election and won. And for eight more terms, she ran and she won. And every time she ran in both the primary and the general election, she was opposed by a man. and she won all of those elections. And she was the first woman from Lackawanna County to go to the legislature. And when she was there, at times she was either the only woman or only one of three women in the legislature. When she decided to retire after redistricting.
This is a state where we always have had 50% women in the population, right?
Yeah, at least. At least. And you know, they talked about while she was in the legislature, her office, her district office, was in her house. It was her kitchen or her back porch. And people would always come and tell her, we needed this, or how can I do this? And she would find a way. There were people who needed, because the welfare system, the public assistance system, was far less in those days. They needed help with medical problems, and she would try to get money raised so that they could go to Philadelphia to have things treated. All sorts of things, and she understood what public service was. That she was not there for her own gratification. It was a way that she was able to sustain herself and her two boys, one of whom grew up to be a federal judge, a county and a federal judge, and the other was one of the preeminent trial lawyers and my mentor, Bob Munley. And, there was not another woman elected to the state legislature from Lackawanna County until only 2 years ago, when Bridget Kozorowski was elected, 2 or 3 years ago. And, Marion Munley, when she decided to retire from the legislature, they actually didn't let her go, but the legislature unanimously elected her as Secretary of the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania. And she served there for 2 years. And it's a position that was once held by a fellow you may have heard of, Ben Franklin. So, it's a pretty big deal. And she was a trailblazer. And, when they did the memorial to her, we now have the first woman mayor in the city of Scranton who spoke. We now have another female legislator. It's only in recent years that we've had female county commissioners, Lorene Cummings, who was a Republican, and Debbie Dominick, who's a Democrat, now serving. But the row offices, three of the row offices, are all women. And, we've finally seen that emerge in politics over recent years. But, I can tell you all of those women are, we're public servants. You get women like you mentioned Kristen Sinema, but Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert over in Colorado, and they're just there to follow up the works. They don't understand that they're there to do things for the people. They're there just for the publicity of it, to build their own private base to
but in that sense, money. They're no different than most of the Democratic and Republican male representatives who look upon politics as a private business and not as a public service. I think most people who take office think of it as, they were born for this job, and they have it by right, and they have to make a living at it, and that's what they do. You get a guy like Grassley. How many years has Grassley been in the Senate? Now he's 88 years old and he's running for re-election?
Re-election, yeah.
He meant to tell me that he's the only reactionary in Idaho that can do the job? There must be plenty of reactionaries in Iowa who can do the job.
Yeah. And he's blocking them. They call it Potomac fever. You get to Washington, D.C., and it becomes the center of your universe.
Written that you should only be going up and you should never go down, that you should always be elected and reelected, but you should never retire. Why? It's only because you have this mentality that it's an individual enterprise. It's your business. You raise the money. The party is just an electoral franchise. You're not bound by any discipline to a party. You're not bound by its program. In that sense, Trump is revolutionizing American politics, because he's insisting that the Republicans stand for a program. And if they don't stand for the program that he supports, then he says you can't be a Republican. And that may be, and it is, a horrible program, but it produces a disciplined organization. And a disciplined organization does things that an undisciplined organization can't, because an undisciplined organization has people like Manchin and Sinema who objectively oppose the program that most of the rest of the party supports. And so they stand in its way. And it becomes impossible for democracy to operate. You can't have democracy on an anarchistic basis. It doesn't work.
Well, you know, we're talking about democracy. What there is an organized movement, although it's loosely organized. But and the parties have had different strategies, except for Howard Dean. And what we're seeing around the country is these Marjorie Greene types running for office, from local school boards to county offices, including election offices, to legislators, to governors, on these bad ideas that we're going to foul things up. The government, this is Steve Bannonism, the deep state. Government is a deep state, and government is your enemy.
Yeah, but they don't believe it. They only, well, I mean, that's all to fool people. And we got to be clear about that. They don't believe it, and they're selling you that to fool you, because they're using government to benefit the people they really represent. They don't want you to use government to represent you.
Well, I actually think that there's two different groups. I think that there's some groups like you that know the difference and are using it. And I think now what we've done is we've grown up a generation that really doesn't know the difference, that they think this is the way it is. I think, certainly someone like a Newt Gingrich would know the difference, and some of the people in the Republican Party know the difference, but they've gone over the other side. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I don't think, knows the difference. I think she just thinks this is the way it is. I think a Jim Jordan thinks this is the way it is. It's all about me and how many likes I can get on Facebook at any one time. So that I think is a great longer term worry, because then you train another generation to believe that that's the norm, and it is, and it isn't, or shouldn't be the norm. When I write articles sometimes about the law and the Constitution, and one thing that I've said on a number of occasions is that the founders, they created a government. They didn't create a business. They created a government because they wanted things to be done for the people. Remember the opening words of the Constitution are, "We the people." That people now take an oath to that Constitution, but really have no allegiance to it, is what I think one of the great dangers that we are facing. And it's why we're now faced with this growing fascistic movement in America, where you have this loyalty to a person, Donald J. Trump, rather than to the people of the United States, the Constitution of the United States. And that's what is playing out in America right now.
Well, it is playing out in America on a political level, and it's important not to give into it, on the one hand, and not to do things that back it up so that the average person in the street can't see the difference between the fascists on the one hand and everybody else on the other hand. That's very important, that you can figure out who's on my side and who's my enemy. You got to know who your enemy is.
Yeah.
And it reminds me that for the last 50 years at least, there's been an unremitting attack on labor unions and on an ignoring of the interests of working people, as if working people don't exist. When I was younger, every newspaper had a labor beat. There was a reporter who wrote about workers and wrote about labor unions, wrote about the needs and interests of working people as against the needs and interests of the employing class. All that has disappeared. There's not a single paper. There's no coverage, for the most part, on the social media. There's no labor beat. That's gone. It's as if you don't talk about workers. There's been an unrelenting assault on the mind that says the only thing young people should pay attention to is being entrepreneurs. In other words, grow up to be a business person. Not that you should grow up to be that there's dignity in labor, that you should grow up to be a skilled worker. The only thing that counts is being a business person. And of course, there's been all kinds of laws that prevent the right to strike. Government workers can't strike, for example, it's illegal. Other industries have passed non-compete clauses that prevent workers from going from one job to another job in the same industry, so of course you can't strike. Guess what? All of a sudden, this year, there's an unprecedented strike wave. We're in the middle of an unprecedented strike wave. There are, at least at this moment, as you and I are speaking, 100,000 workers in almost every state in the union and in every industry on strike. And there's at least 5 million workers who were working before the pandemic who refused to go to work today. They're on strike without picketing. It's quite remarkable. It turns out that there are objective laws in this world that don't get passed by Congress, but that get that the economy creates, and that really do impact on people's consciousness, and ultimately they do wake up and do something.
Yeah, but it took a pandemic for this to happen.
That's true. That's right. If you don't have good leadership, then it takes disaster to wake people up.
Yeah, and it took a pandemic. But we're seeing some things. Now, don't forget that labor union membership outside of government has plummeted to almost the single digits in private enterprises.
The low single digits, not just the single digits.
Yeah, but there are places where this is going on. And, you know, Robert Reich, the former labor secretary, is always writing and tweeting about the fact that CEO pay keeps increasing in proportion to what the average worker gets, and that we haven't had a raise in minimum wage laws since in 12 years.
Forget the minimum wage. The average male white worker today has if you adjust for inflation, his wage is exactly what it was 40 years ago. 40 years ago.
No progress.
No progress.
Which is why families need two breadwinners, two people to.
Yeah, which is why people, when a fascist like Trump comes along and says, you know, it's the Mexicans who are taking your wages from you, it's the Chinese who are taking your jobs from you, some people will buy it, because 40 years, and the Democrats haven't really opposed it, really haven't stood up for the rights of working people. And there isn't anybody else. The left was driven out of politics by both the Republicans and the Democrats 50, 60 years ago. So why wouldn't working people turn to the fascists with a clear explanation? Colored workers are taking your pay and your jobs, which is all nonsense. The fact is we need immigrant workers. We don't have enough able-bodied workers in the country. The fact is the companies didn't run away to China because the Chinese enticed them. They ran away to China because the bosses saw a way to make more profit by dumping American workers in favor of low-paid workers elsewhere. And that's been going on since forever.
Yeah, I mean, the garment workers left New York City for northeastern Pennsylvania, and they left northeastern Pennsylvania for the Carolinas. And
Then they went to Haiti and Ecuador, and then they went to Asia.
Asia, yeah. China and Vietnam and other places, but with labor, again, you've trained an entire generation and now second generation in not knowing what organized labor is or what they could do for people, and also the nature you talk about the Democrats, they become the party of the educated. But the jobs that the educated do don't lend themselves to the unionization, except maybe teachers' unions.
Well, nurses, they're educated.
And they're not. Nurses aren't unionized in many places.
No, but nurses are on strike in many places.
Yeah, they
including are. Including in Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah, they've been on strike in many places because all of a sudden the balance has shifted. We need the workers more than we need the bosses, so to speak, which was always true, but it just became apparent in the pandemic, and people started doing. You know, they're still studying this. This is going to be studied.
It's common sense. It doesn't take a lot of study. If nobody makes a living, who's going to buy the stuff that's produced? And if nobody buys the stuff that's produced, how will a company make a profit?
Yeah, it's more than wages. It's people saying the conditions that I have to work on, what I have to give up in order to work. The idea that they want us to work longer hours, that they want us to work in certain conditions. And, you know, when people were trapped at home, for want of a better word, they started realizing other things about their families and the importance of being there. And that's why when you get into the second infrastructure deal that the Democrats have been proposing, where you get into, you know, child care and things like that, that would help get people back in the workforce and alleviate some of their anxieties. That's something that is worth fighting for. But you get, as you said, you get the Manchins and the Sinemas who won't go for it, and that's the conundrum we have right now. But which way? But you know, which way is the trend going? You know, right now it's going one way. Whether it'll be able to sustain its momentum is another question. Is another question.
It's completely a question of leadership. It's completely a question of whether you have democratic organizations, and that the democratic organizations. I don't mean Democratic Party. I mean democratically run organizations. And that these organizations can hold the politicians' feet to the fire so that they are responsible to these mass organizations and not to themselves and to their money people.
Well, when you say organizations, we're talking about organizing.
Yes, we're talking about organizing.
You know, you can't have an organization without organizing.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think I mentioned that before. You have to.
Yes. What we have and what we're going to see is how the 1% forces, the Koch brother forces, are able to try to organize against it through Republican politics, basically. What they can do to get around, what they can make more, we're seeing it on a mini scale, or maybe not so mini scale, when you see what Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis did, trying to override public safety by executive fiat, basically going against their prior principles of local control and things like that, which is one reason it's important, like in Pennsylvania, to have a Democratic governor to at least check the legislature. The legislature is trying to find ways around things by passing bills to put stuff on ballots. Where the governor can't veto it, but you know, we'll have to see. You know, there's two gubernatorial elections this year. This is the off year that may produce a trend. Virginia, which is set to be tight, even though it's been running as a much bluer state of recent years, and also in New Jersey, and you see already commentators talking about. It's not enough for the Democrat to win. It's that they have to win by a large enough margin. If they don't, I saw Amy Walter from the Cook Report, or it's now the Cook-Walter Report, saying, well, you know, Virginia was a plus 10 for Democrats. If if McAuliffe only wins by plus two, that's an 8-point swing, and it's bad for the Democrats, because if you take that to Pennsylvania and they lose an 8-point swing, they're not going to, stuff like that. Each election is sui generis, and there are different things to eat in each state that affect elections. And so there's, you can sometimes see trends, but they're not always more universal.
The thing is, the Republicans, especially the Trump Republicans, have a clear message. It's been drummed into people's heads way before Trump ever arose as a politician. It's racism. You vote for the Republicans because colored people are taking your jobs. That's their message. And they can and do organize behind that. The Chinese caused COVID. They not only want your jobs, they want to kill you. We gotta oppose the Chinese across the board every way we can. Just another example of how colored people are after you.
Well, it's the politics of division.
It's the politics of division. Now, the Democrats, if they're going to win, have to oppose that. They have to oppose, and they've got they're at a disadvantage because the racist argument has been with us since Washington's time. The anti-racist argument is relatively new. Yeah. And if the Democrats give in on any aspect of it, they put themselves at a handicap. In that sense, the NRA is pretty clever. The NRA opposes every single possible restriction on the sale of guns and on the ownership of guns, no matter how absurd it is. Mentally ill people should have guns. Convicted felons should have guns. Child abusers should have guns. Why? Because once you restrict it a little bit, it gets restricted a lot, they say.
Slippery slope argument. But, the problem, though, when you're building a broader base coalition like the Democrats are, is you have to be careful not to do self-harm. The Black Lives Matter movement had momentum until you got into defund the police. Which was an absurdist argument because black communities, you talk to Jim Clyburn, who really made Joe Biden president, and he said, we don't want that argument. We want our communities to be safe, and we need police, but we need the proper policing, not the racist policing that we've seen over time.
But that kind of policy can only be successful in a democratic organization, not Democratic Party, a democratically run organization where you have internal debate that clarifies things.
Well, did you see this week Philadelphia passed a law that the police can no longer stop people for minor things like taillights or lights being out on your license plates? These are the things that we've seen time and time again escalate into shootings and killings and woundings of both police and of people of color who are behind the wheel.
Yeah.
That's a more common sense law. Now, other laws just weren't common sense, where you just turn people out back on the street after they've done things that they should be put away for. So people assault people and they're back on the street in 24 hours, and then they assault someone else and they assault someone else. You can't have that.
Nobody, I think, wants that. In any case, that's a discussion that we can't have in the next 4 seconds, which is about what we've got left. So it's worth discussing. We can talk about that, but we can't discuss it properly in a soundbite. So we got to stop.
We'll see what the coming week brings.
We'll see what the coming week brings. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.